Live. Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Hangout. I'm Regina McMenemy and I'm here with the staff of the Geek Embassy, Ryan Broom, Isabella Oliveira, and Rhonda Oglesby. How's everybody doing today?
I'm sober.
I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Non-sober Rhonda is
beginning of the show. Oh, we had some technical difficulties, our esteemed listeners.
Yes, and it means that Isabella's never laughing again.
Yep.
No.
Let's put that to the test. Who knows a really funny joke? I know a really silly knock-knock joke.
I know a really nothing.
Silly. Okay, here we go. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Two.
To who?
To who?
No, to whom? Oh, she laughed. She laughed.
I'm just going to laugh off mic.
I have to give credit where credit is due. My father-in-law told me that joke today, so there you go.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Nice.
All right, so we have some stuff we want to talk about today. We're going to talk a little bit about the launch of the Geek Embassy. Isabella and I are going to tell some stories from Emerald City Comic Con, where we attended last weekend. Ron is going to share, I think, about Geek Craft Con. You still want to talk about that, Rhonda? No?
No.
No? All right, you'll tell another interesting story about Florida, apparently.
Yes.
And I had for us to talk about the Walking Dead debacle.
Debacle.
Oh,
okay.
That's what I'm calling it. That has my personal bias involved in it, though. So.
Yeah, that was half of our drive up to Seattle.
Yeah.
That's pretty entertaining.
So it's about.
I just got like a blow by blow account of what was.
That's like an hour and a half discussion about that episode. That's crazy.
Well, it was about that and like the last three episodes, I guess. It wasn't just the last one. Yeah, and then
we ought to each make a recommendation of who should be killed off too.
Oh, we should. Yes, we should include that in that who we think should get the bat.
The bat had a name. I can't remember the name. Do you guys remember
Lucille.
The bat's name?
Lucille.
Which was the same name as B.B. King's guitar. I don't know how I feel about that.
Huh. I didn't know that. It's interesting, though.
All it does is, it just reminds me of Arrested Development.
Lucille does?
Lucille.
Oh, yeah. Lucille. So, why don't we talk a little bit about the Geek Embassy?
Okay.
Go for it.
I already did a whole video.
Oh, you're dropping the mic on that?
No, I'm just kidding. So we launched a new website the end of March, where we are now the Geek Embassy, sort of moving to a larger geek culture umbrella from Game On Girl. And the way I try to describe it to everybody is, you know, Game On Girl started as my dissertation research and was very tightly focused because a dissertation has to be tightly focused. That's the nature of a dissertation. But through the podcast and through the conversations Rhonda and I would have on a regular basis, we went well beyond just gender and gaming and really moved into the broader geek culture. And so we wanted the website to reflect that. And secondly, I also wanted to make a place where we could welcome people into geek culture and give a place for people to learn. And that's the kind of content that we're working on now. We're sort of in let's figure out how we're going to start creating content and what we're going to sort of focus on for the site right now. But we should have some exciting things coming up.
Yeah, the Geek Embassy, right now, we've got divided into five consulates, and there is lifestyle, play, pop culture, tech, and story.
I was starting to count them in my head. I'm like, oh, I always pull up one of the banners.
Yeah, I have to. Well,
I have to look at it.
I worked on the pictures so much. If I just remember that, I can remember all the pictures. So.
Well, of course, right? Yes.
Lifestyle is just general living, as far as foodie stuff goes. Maybe home brewing, raising kids, schooling, different things like that. But now, all in the scope of a geek family.
Exactly.
Pop culture is your typical pop culture stuff, mostly TVs and movie, because some pop culture, some things that might be seen in one or the other, like comic books, novels, web series, might fall under the story category, which is really, really immersive in the process and in the people who actually do the writing and maybe even just reviews. Tech, hopefully, will deal with all the gadgets that are all over our lives all the time now and so commonplace. And
and computers and other kinds of...
Yeah, what's the other one now?
Oh, STEM. We put STEM under this. Science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yeah, but what's the other console? I missed one.
Lifestyle, story,
play.
Pop culture, play.
Play.
That was the most important one.
Because we know we just forget about play.
We always play. And so it's all kinds of play. It's outdoor play, it's indoor play, it's computer play, board game play. Because I think as a group, as a generation, a culture, we're rediscovering play and not just how important it is to de-stress, but how important gamification is in general and what we can learn from it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Hopefully we'll have ambassadors from all of those consulates, and we'll have ambassadors at the cons, and hopefully make a place that we're very, very approachable, and make it a safe, creating a safe geek community.
Yeah, that was my favorite thing about Emerald City, was I had a banner, which I meant to put up today, but I didn't get up, for the booth that we had with the Meaner Geek. And, you know, people would walk up and say, tell me what the Geek Embassy is. And it was really a pleasure to be like, we're keeping in mind that people are new to geek culture and trying to help sort of introduce people to these passions and these things that we love. And we want other people to love as well. And it was really interesting for me because there were at least four or five parents that I talked to who were like, oh, yes, please, because I don't really understand my kid stuff. I'm not even sure what I'm doing here today.
Yeah, and that's funny. I talked to several dads last week at work who had heard about the North Carolina, the Oak City Comic Con, and the Geek Craft Con, and they're like, look, I've got my kids this weekend by myself, and I like to take them to do something, and I think they would like this con, and talking to people about things like that. And also, I don't know if you guys remember, I went to the anime con in 2015, and there was a dad there who had run into the same problem. His daughter was way into anime, and he knew nothing about it, and he became a fan, and he also became a resource to other parents. So he wrote a book, and he was presenting a panel, Anime 101 for Parents.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was an awesome panel.
Yeah. What'd you say, Ryan? I think you got cut out.
Oh, I just said that's really cool.
I really like that. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to thank everybody who's here for your contributions for getting the new site up and running. Because if you're listening or you're watching and you don't know, launching a new website is kind of a big deal. And doing it on a very extreme and tight deadline is even bigger of a deal. And there was a lot of grunt work that went on behind the scenes mm-hmm. that hopefully makes the site seamless to you guys, but was not seamless in our relaunch in any way, shape, or form. So thanks,
Rhonda.
We have Rhonda.
Some very talented people that that have day jobs.
Yeah, exactly. Like all of us.
Yeah. I'll never forget that when we went to PAX East, Regina, and I was talking to one of the girls after the panel, and she thought we did this as a living.
Yeah. Well, I had someone ask me that, someone who I interviewed at Emerald City Comic Con. He's like, oh, is this what you do for your job? And I was like, no, this doesn't make me money. This is something else. And he's like, oh. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes it costs you money, so really, you know.
Yeah, I would say that was kind of what I was trying to insinuate. I'm like, oh, I spend lots of money on this, especially on a booth at a con. Those are that's definitely a more expensive way to go for things. But that was just a funny moment where he's like, oh, you know, this is what you do? And I'm like, that'd be nice. I can make a living with it. But yeah, so I wanted to thank you guys, you three, for your contributions. Isabella, for fixing, what was it, 500 or so broken links on the site?
So many links.
So many links.
All of our images were also broken.
Yes.
Yeah. So all the images were broken. So Isabella spent a great deal of time going back and rebuilding a lot of content for the site. And not with us in the Hangout today. I want to thank Mark because he did a lot of the grunt work as well behind the scenes, and my friend Russ, who was our WordPress ringer at the end, who helped us when we broke things.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you, Russ, who has had to save us at least one senseless lights the site's launched as well, so we appreciate that effort, too. So, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about ECC, then. I've already mentioned a little bit about it. Isabella, why don't you share a little bit about your experience?
Okay, so it was actually fairly overwhelming.
Really? I can't imagine that a con where there's... I looked it up. There were 70,000 attendees.
70,000.
70,000.
Wow. And even in our little corner on the sixth floor, it was a lot of people coming by, and just being around that many people is a totally different experience because, you know... You do not get that many geeks in real life, and you cannot, well, we get a lot of stealth geeks in real life, but that's what some of my friends call it. It's like, you're never quite sure, but when most of the attendees are in costume of some sort, it's just, like, it's nice being able to pick it out, and then going back to your normal muggle life.
Yeah.
is really different. It was a change. I was like, oh, everyone's normal again.
I'm not appearing through crowds of people wondering what costumes people have on, although I do kind of wonder that sometimes anyway. I wonder what they're trying to cosplay. Oh, wait, I'm in downtown Portland. I'm not looking for cosplayers.
No, not unless something is happening.
So was the Geek Girl Con the biggest con you'd ever been to?
It was the only con I'd been to.
That's right.
Yeah. So compared to that to ECCC, it was very, very different. I mean, it was like so many times bigger.
And yeah, we missed a whole section of the show floor.
just by accident. I didn't go over there until the last day when I just like made my rounds, mm-hmm. bought things.
Yeah. Yeah, right before we were heading out. So I'm glad you got a chance to see it.
How's the con organized?
It takes place in both buildings at the Washington State Convention Center in Seattle. So the primary building is, of course, the main convention center, which has the exhibitors floor and the main stage, I guess. Yeah. Where the big names do their panels, like Nathan Fillion was there, and the guy who plays Daryl, whose name I can't remember, Norman Reedus, he was
Norman,
there.
Yeah,
he was there. So, and we were on the same floor. So we were on the sixth floor this time. Last year we were on the fourth floor. That's where the main stage is. So you have the exhibitors on one half of them that fourth floor, and then the main stage on one side and exhibitors on the other. And we were two stories up from that this year. But the signatures, like where you could get your picture taken and the signatures with all the celebrities, was on our same floor. So we still had a lot of people, I think, who were rotating around our area because of that. There's the part that we missed, that I missed, that Isabella got to go see, was the Artist Alley, where there's more of the small independent comics represented. The section that we were in was sort of the larger distributors and such. Dark Horse has a big presence.
Image.
Valve had, Image. I'm trying to think, who else was it that was on the Skybridge? I was trying to think.
That was Valve and another.
Valve, is it Boom? Was it Boom Comics?
Yes, yes. They had a big display.
They had a huge display.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. They had, and so they have it set up, you know, where you can stop and get signatures. It was nice because this year, from last year, they made the aisles a little wider, so it was a little easier to navigate with the amount of people. But in the high traffic areas where they had, like, people who had big lines for signatures, it got really bottlenecked really quickly, and they were cutting people off too from standing in line.
Well, yeah, and they put the lines for the main stage like in front of some of the artists' booths, and I told you, like, the one comic I told you about, I couldn't get in to see him because there was something big happening on the main stage, and so I couldn't fight through the people. Because there's no room.
Yeah, that was poor planning. Yeah, that was some poor planning. So, because a lot of people will wait, you know. I heard people were lining up for Nathan Fillion. He was presenting, I think, had his panel at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and people started lining up pretty much as soon as this convention center opened at 8 o'clock in the morning to get in. So.
Yeah, my friend lined up like 2 hours before a panel to be able to get in.
To get into it, yeah. And so the other floors are panels, which I didn't make to any because I was too busy at the booth.
Well, that's good.
I got to see a whole two panels.
But they have a nice cross-section of panels usually with comics and other, they, you know, sort of broader geek culture also represented in their panels. So it's a fun con. Like Isabella said, there's tons of cosplay.
There's so much. I was, like, overwhelmed.
Almost everywhere you go, there's somebody in costume. There tends to be a lot of bottleneck through the main areas of the convention center because people stop to take pictures a lot, and they were being really diligent about keeping you out of, you know, certain areas with costumes because, you know, people would stop to take pictures. And apparently, which I didn't know until afterward, they had the whole, there's like a garden outside the main convention center with a bunch of trees, and they had that all set up to take cosplay pictures. So if you wanted to go see even more cosplay, you could have just walked out there, and pretty much everybody who was in costume was coming by there at some point in time.
I'm going to try to go to that next year.
I think we should plan for it.
I don't know that there is a comic book con that big on the East Coast.
I think the next largest one, like at San Diego, from what I understand, and I don't want to be wrong and have people get like up in arms, but my understanding is that San Diego, Emerald City, and New York are the three biggest comic cons.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll look into New York, because New York's on my bucket list anyway, so.
Yeah. I don't know that it's in Manhattan. I don't remember. But it's, yeah, we'll look that up. AJ, who's the Mean Geek, he's gone to that one as well. He likes Emerald City better, so. Go figure. The understanding I have is that New York is leaning more toward the way San Diego's gone, where it's more about comics assets than it is about comic books.
Oh, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, so I don't know, because like I said, I haven't been to New York, but that's one of the things I always appreciated about Emerald City was the number of books and small artists and such that were there. So, and that people like us can have a booth. What was that?
What'd you say?
People like can't.
I said that people like us.
People like us.
Yeah, like the like Geek Embassy and the TMG cast, and we had another podcast called The Womb Mates, who were sort of part of our booth, kind of. They disappeared about one day through the con, I guess.
Did you guys meet any other neat people?
I had a bunch of people that I interviewed that I really enjoyed talking to. I talked with Jeff Martin. Here's his card, Jeff Martin. We have his link on the site.
That's cool.
Yeah, he does Hockeypocalypse is the name of one of his cartoons. and he's from Canada, so he's like, he wanted to do something associated with hockey that was successful. And he wrote a book. He was actually a social studies teacher, social studies teacher. And he wrote a book called 1812, a graphic novel. That's a picture from it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it's actually used now to teach the War of 1812 in schools. So that was a really great story. I really loved hearing him talk about that, that it was the success of that that let him essentially stop teaching and become an illustrator full-time. Wow. So Jeff Martin. There's a couple of people who I didn't get a chance to put in the episode that we did. This one artist, she was really cool. Her name's Rosellen. This is her card. It's a little dark, but it shows up pretty well here. And she talked about this project that she's involved in called Object Head Zine. And the basic idea of project of this was they create characters where their heads are whatever symbol they're working on or whatever symbol they're talking about. So if they're talking about television, then the object head is, you know, a TV or, you know, whatever else it might be. It was a really interesting concept. But they're actually looking for paid artists, and they'll be starting to accept applications on June 2nd. So I'll try to put a link up to this, too, so you can go check that out. So, yeah, she said that was a really exciting thing that she did. The one book that I bought came from one of the other people that we interviewed, and it's Girl Genius. And I got to talk to Phil Scolio.
You got the book?
I did get the book, yeah. I got it, but I got it. Well, as soon as I was interviewing him, I was like, well, I should probably have something to sign. So he signed it for me on the front here. He drew a little picture and his signature right there. Oh, yeah. So Girl Genius, which is about mad science. The main character's name is Agatha, and she discovers that she kind of like, I probably shouldn't draw the comparison, but kind of like Harry Potter, she discovers that she has this magical ability, although she didn't know it for much of her life, so.
Cool.
Yeah, he was cool, and he was a great interview, like, he was really fun to talk to, so.
What about you, Isabella?
On the Geek Embassy website.
Yes, which you can listen to on the Geek Embassy website. Thankfully edited by Ryan.
Yes, masterfully edited by Ryan.
Yes.
I don't know if that one was masterfully edited, but thank you. The thing about the live ones is there isn't a lot of editing involved.
Yeah, there's not much you can do about certain things that happen when you're doing live interviews. Like, well, having Phil Folio at the table, people kept coming, wanting to, like, walk up and talk to him because he's, you know, reasonably well-known. And so I was like, we're, like, trying to talk in the show, and I'm like, all these people are, like, walking by, like, trying to come up close to the table to get his attention. And he was pro, though. He just kept his eyes locked, so stay focused. So, yeah, it was good.
What about you, Isabella? Is there anyone interesting you met or got to do?
I met a few. I talked for a few minutes with a couple of comic creators who do webcomics I like. But, like, no one in particular, like, because I can't remember their names right now.
Do you remember the name of the comics?
There's one called The Devil's Panties.
Yes. She's awesome. Did you get to meet her?
I did get to meet her. I got a print from her, actually, that I'm going to frame because she signed it and everything. So, yeah, it's pretty great. And there were a few others, but I honestly am blanking on their names. But I just went around and you know, talked to people, looked at their art. That's why I really like Artist Eye, because people get really excited to talk about the things they make. And I find that very exciting.
Trying to look her name up because she's want to make sure I give her credit. If I can, I don't know why I can't remember. I was following her comic for ages and reading her blog. It's hilarious.
And I talked to Jenny. Who was that?
Oh, God. Jenny Breeden. Right?
Oh, yes. Yes. You're right.
Sorry, Regina.
Oh, no, I was trying to remember. There's someone I have lined up who wants to be, who agreed to talk to us for an interview for the show. And I'm trying to remember what the comic was.
Was it the unicorn one?
Yes, the unicorn one.
Phoebe and her unicorn?
Phoebe and her unicorn.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. So I talked to her, and she is going to come talk to us for the embassy. So we can arrange that and have an interview with her. And it's adorable. As Isabella described it to me, it's like Calvin and Hobbes, but a little girl with a unicorn.
Her name's Dana Simpson.
Dana Simpson.
Yes.
Cool.
It's pretty adorable.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think we need to let everybody know that we've turned the Q&A on.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too. Yeah, for our watchers. Well, we have one person watching right now.
Hello.
Yeah, hello, person watching.
One person.
So Q&A is on, so we can take your questions and answers live. Well, let's talk about The Walking Dead.
Yes.
This is a really good hope.
Isabella have already talked about it.
Yes.
So
yeah, but I didn't even see it. I just got Regina's experience of experiencing it. No, I stopped watching it after the mid-season premiere, basically.
That happened a lot. Because Mark did the same thing. Mark stopped watching after the mid-season premiere, too.
I did that same thing for a long time.
and then caught up?
Well, yeah. And then my wife was watching it, so I felt the need to,
Well,
catch
I was about... I was about to catch up, and then that whole finale thing happened, and I suddenly didn't really feel like it.
It was so good, though.
I know, but it might be one of those shows that I catch up with later.
What did you say, Rhonda?
I said, tell us how good it was.
I just think the last few episodes leading up to it, and the last episode, were just really well done story-wise. And, it helps that I binge-watched it, so I didn't have to suffer like the rest of the viewing public that, watched it as it came out or the next day after it came out. And so it was really nice to see them stitch back-to-back how they did those stories. And I don't want to give too much away in case there's other people that haven't seen it. But I guess, I don't know, are we doing full spoilers here?
Yeah.
Yes, we should do a full spoiler warning right now. All right, cat's on my desk. Hold on, pardon me. I'm trying. Okay, she's going to sit in the window. And we see a tail come across here.
I know that Mark was talking to me about it, and he had read some stuff on the internet. Mark is not one to let spoilers ruin his fun of investigating. So, at the end when somebody gets it, with Lucille the Bat, and we don't know who it is, I thought it was a really good cliffhanger. I really liked how they did it technically.
When they shifted perspective to first person?
Right. Yeah, and then when the person finally got beaten, whoever it was, we don't know who it is, And they switch angles fast enough that you can't really geographically find out where that person is in the scene by where they're sitting. Though people have tried. I think it was a good cliffhanger. And watching The Talking Dead afterwards, they were saying that the cast doesn't even know who it is at this point until they start to reshoot. And, they said it's going to take this show in kind of a new direction. And I think, at this point in time, it kind of needs it because there were a lot of people that just kind of are starting to drop off a bit. That was a nice cat cameo.
Thank you. I was going to tell that. She says bye. Yeah, I thought that was interesting that they didn't tell the cast either what happened. So.
So did you like it or not like it? What was the hour and a half conversation about in the car on the way to ECC?
Here's my problem. And she's laughing again. She laughed. Did everybody hear that?
Yeah.
That was Isabella laughing. I have a problem with the marketing, because they started at the mid-season premiere to promote the fact that a main character was dying in the last episode to build the tension for that last part of the season. And I feel like that's the worst way to pull a punch. Like, they built up so much hype about it and so much about who's it going to be, blah, blah, blah. You know, and you see things, and I don't know the stories from the books, and I've only read, I think I read the first volume, but I don't know the stories from that, but you see people talking about who it is who died in the book and all these different things, and they're saying it's not the person who died in the book, and they're making this big deal about who it's going to be, and I think pulling a punch like that was cheap.
Well, I mean, the show's been running for 6 years now, 6 or 7 years, and
yeah.
I mean, if they... You know, I'm sure they know just as well as we know the people that, you know, kind of have grown a little bit tired of the show and things like that. And
yeah, I'm, you know, I'm
they,
sure.
They've got to market it so they build up the hype.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it was absolutely intentional to have it be, you know, who's it going to be, who's it going to be, who's it going to be? We're not going to tell you. You know, I have no doubt that that was intentional to keep people to come back to you know, to watch the premiere in the fall. And I think I lost a fair amount of respect when they did that, I guess, is how I would, I've always respected The Walking Dead as a vehicle for storytelling, because they've always had good character development, and they've always had, you know, great story arcs and interesting, you know, plot developments. And there is a certain level of repetition in the stories that are going to be told, and that's kind of inevitable when you're dealing long-term with a finite resource of sorts. So the zombie apocalypse is always going to have sort of a finite line to it, because there's only so much you can drive your story from that. And that's why it's always been such a great show, because it wasn't dependent on the zombies. The zombies were the gimmick. They were the MacGuffin. And to take, you know, characters that we love and that we're so engaged with and be like, ha ha ha, you don't know what happened, you don't know what happened. I'm just kind of like...
They've been doing that on television forever. This is not a new thing. I mean, it really shouldn't upset you that much. Other than the violence of how it ended, I mean, how's that any different than Terminus, where they're all locked into a train car about to, you know...
Well, you know who's locked in the train car. You know at the end of that, you know who everybody is. No, a main character didn't just die, and you didn't go through this whole emotional thing about, oh my god, we're hanging on, you know, the edge here, and we know somebody's going to die, and it's about to happen, and then, oh, by the way, we're not telling you. Like, it's the same way I felt about them extending the flight from the house at the end of a... For the mid-season premiere, right, they were all escaping the house in the horde, and they kept that at the end of that scene for the mid-season premiere. And I felt like that should have been the first part of the season finale, because I couldn't carry the emotion through of that story. It was lost in the however many weeks between when one piece led to the next. At this point, I already have lost the feeling that I had about losing that character, because I'm like, you're not going to tell me until October? What?
Yeah, but I'm sure they're going to do they're probably going to repeat that scene,
I'm sure.
Can't recreate like an episode's feeling like in like a couple minutes. Like I mean, I haven't watched it, but I already don't really care what happens now. Like, it's lost me.
Well,
like,
I think that's the problem. Like, I think they might have sensed, like Ryan said, that there's a certain level of, you know, slipping from this. And I think that that's part of the reason for doing it. Because I actually agree. I read some critiques that didn't like the final episode of the season and the game, and it's literally a game, right, that the saviors are playing. Like, they're playing cat and mouse with our heroes. They're like, go that way, go that way, go that way. You know, and I loved the way they orchestrated that, because it showed the power of the saviors and really, you know, kind of messed with them. And I could kind of appreciate that as the build up to this, like, climactic scene. And then I was just like, oh, like, what, really? So I don't know. I'm, you know, just one person.
No, you're not.
You probably won't care in like a month anyway. So. And then, you know, once October rolls around and they start promoing again, you'll be like, oh, yeah.
No. They are dead to me.
Well, okay. That's the thing.
When, like, we have a hangout in early October or late September, we'll check your temperature then.
Well, because I wasn't even that excited about the mid-season premiere this time around. Like, I was going to watch it, but even then, I was just kind of blasé about it.
It had already lost your...
It had already lost me. I mean, it really is the same storyline over and over again. Like Rhonda said, like, I can't remember how she put it. Do you remember, Rhonda?
What, in the tweet?
Yeah, the thing you tweeted.
Yeah, well, I mean, oh, yeah, about Rick.
About Rick, yeah.
Yeah.
Same that was part scene. Of our hour and a half conversation about this.
What was the Rick piece, since I wasn't in the car?
It, just that, yeah, the same old thing happens. I could see Rick, his face, and how he was getting dejected and completely emptied, just like he did after Lori died. And he kind of went off the rails and started talking on the phone, and then he rises from the ashes and yanks his group together and says, you're going to do it my way or you'll die, and just the cycle of Rick's life. It just over and over.
I hate to break it to you guys, but this is how every movie goes, how every TV show goes. This is
okay,
the formula.
But it doesn't matter that this is the same thing that's done over and over again. If it's done poorly, when the end of that episode finished, I jumped off the couch and I was doing this to the TV. I was screaming at the TV and I was like, I'm never watching this show again. Now, that is an emotional response you want a show to have, but it's the wrong one. Because
I felt the same way when the Seahawks lost the Super Bowl the second time they played, but I still watched the next season.
No. Oh,
poor Ryan.
Poor Ryan. Poor you.
For what? Are you talking about Carolina?
No, I just think you're taking this way too personally. They've been doing cliffhangers and shows forever. And
I know, but that doesn't mean we have to care. Like, well, like, legitimately not caring anymore. It's just, it's going to make me, like, if I don't care, I'm not going to watch the show anymore. I don't have time to stick with a show that just doesn't do anything for me anymore, honestly.
But it hadn't done anything for you before that point anyway, so you can't blame... I can't blame it on the last episode.
Right. That was kind of just the last straw when I heard about that, because I was planning to keep watching. I was planning on catching up. And then when I heard about that, I still think you should. Well, maybe when it's all done. It's kind of one of those things, like, maybe when it's all over, and if I'm really curious, I'll go back, but probably not.
All right, then.
Never say never. I know I will admit that, you know, as I have said on countless occasions, I'm a sucker for the story. Sometimes I have to know how the story ends, and so begrudgingly I probably will go back and watch the beginning, not so much to see who dies as to see how they take it, and see what direction, if there is a new direction that they're taking the show. Which I'm guessing has something to do with the guys on the horseback. But I still have an issue, by the way, with the fact that there are no, like, zombie animals.
This was also our discussion. My point is that zombie animals would just mean everyone's dead. Like, right. You can't.
But it's bloodborne, right? It's been established that the zombification is in the blood, right? So wouldn't all, like, bloodborne animals be susceptible
No. Like, humans have illnesses that animals can't catch, and vice versa. When your dog gets sick and licks you on the face, you're not going to catch his cold.
But airborne things, airborne kind of means that it can jump species. That's kind of like the next step.
Well, we had, you know, hoof and mouse disease or something, and that made its way to humans. So it can happen. I mean, I'm not saying this late.
I'm just saying it's easy enough to explain that one away. It's not like inconceivable right. that, you know, this has to be this way.
I just would love the scene to, like, have them go, like, they're going to be hunting something and turn around and have it, like, be this. Maybe that's how they can end the show.
Just watch Resident Evil. It'll be all right.
All right.
Play 7 Days to Die. There's lots of zombie dogs in there.
Right.
And they really suck.
So I've heard.
So I love four.
Yeah. Who's your vote for who should be meeting Lucille for the last time? That was obscure. Who should be the person killed off?
Yeah.
Or
I think if they really want to switch it up, I think it should be Rick.
Well, Regina said that she's pretty sick of his face.
Yeah, the slackjaw look that he gets at the end of these, like, traumatic things where, like, he can no longer hold his mouth open and he's all sweaty and he's, like, losing his mind. Like, because it's the same thing, like Karanda said, he always goes through the same sort of, like, physical, emotional, you know, demonstration of it. And I was like, you know, as he just kind of, like, broke down and all of a sudden, oh, here's the slackjawed, you know, face. And not that I wouldn't be slackjawed and sweaty, too, if I was staring down a bat that was wrapped in barbed wire, but...
Well, how would he do it differently?
How'd he do it differently?
I'm just going to play devil's advocate to this entire episode. Just you know.
You don't go for it.
Like me against you guys right now.
How would I do it differently? Like, and as an actor, like if I was acting it out?
Well, I mean, just as a storyline, because you're following, you guys are saying that he has the same emotion, but I'm sure, you know, when you get upset, you have pretty much the same face when you get upset time after time after time.
That's probably true. So maybe the consistency
how could
isn't
they,
such a
how
bad
could
thing.
They tell the story differently, I guess.
I don't know. I think
having
I,
that same emotion.
You know, I think Rick has this pattern where he loses it after it's happening. Like, he goes through and he, like, holds on to it and then he loses it after. Maybe it would be nice if he lost it in the middle of it. Like, if he's so, you know, worried about keeping everybody alive, maybe he could have lost his mind as they were all, like, on their knees and, you know, ready to be bludgeoned to death.
Yeah. Well, we had this discussion about how the show is not treating certain characters, like they're kind of betraying, like, what makes their characters true. Like we like Abraham because, well, me and Regina do like Abraham because he, like, even if he does stuff that's really dumb, he's still very true to his character. Mm-hmm. And we talked about what they were doing with Carol, where they were kind of going against what made her character so great. And I can only speak to that as much as I know from what I've read and what Regina told me, but...
Yeah, I was wondering, actually, Rhonda, what you thought about Carol, because you had mentioned Rick, so what did you think about Carol's arc?
I think that it was due... this is what I feel like is missing with Rick, is an evolution. Carol started off as a submissive person who did not know she had any choices. And then she learned she had choices, and she learned that she was resourceful and skillful. And then she gave in to the absolute darkest side of that. And now she doesn't want to be a part of that. And it is a conflict directly with what it takes to survive.
Right.
And she's revisiting or reacquainting herself with her emotions of the people that she has around her. And because of that, and because of the decisions she's had to make of late, she's become reckless and is running away. And I think that's very, very interesting. It's not cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not repetitive. She's evolving. Rick is not evolving at all.
Well, he flipped. That's that's the thing that's so hard, I think, partially for me with Rick's character in general, is he went from, you know, if we want to talk in D&D terms, like alignment terms, right, he was lawful good. He was like, you do the right thing, you help people who are alive, and you do this. And he just completely went, like, 180 from that, on the opposite side of, you're alive, you're dead. No question. And I think that that's part of Morgan's arc, too, is to help kind of help facilitate that kind of change for Rick. And that might be worth seeing if they can make that work with the show. And I think Morgan also is going to be the touchstone that brings Carol back and gets her back in sort of a more rational. Because that's the interesting thing about Carol's breakdown, is it is emotionally irrational, which emotions are irrational. And we haven't really seen anybody kind of launch into that in the show to the depths that they're doing for Carol. So, you know, it would be interesting to see. It's hard, though, because, you watch her change into this, you know, character who's so capable and so able. It's hard to watch her falter in that emotionally.
She just got sick of it. Mm-hmm. She got tired of playing the game, so...
And she, aligns that, you know, sick of it with, you know, if you love somebody, if you care for people, you have to kill for them. She's like, that's all there is. You just have to kill for them one way or another. And it's you're either killing the dead or you're killing the living. And you know, it's interesting to watch her sort of, you know, reconcile that, especially after how it happened with that little boy whose name I can't remember because I didn't care anything about those characters after a certain point in the story. But she did literally traumatize him, and I don't know if she knew exactly how badly she had done that. But I think that was an interesting setup for her break, because I think that what happened with him and kind of realizing that she had traumatized him to the degree she had, because in one of the last episodes she's actually standing over his grave, you know, looking at his grave, and I think that was interesting. So, in hindsight, maybe I think they did pull her story together to the point where, you know, she's counting down the number of people she's killed and all those kind of other pieces. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see if they can do that kind of story with Rick.
I think they should kill Maggie.
You think they should kill Maggie? Well, she's half dead at that point anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean... My gut says Maggie's one's going to go because she was on her way out anyway, but at the same time, you know, whoever they did kill, if Maggie's still alive, then she'll probably get medical attention so she can, you know, do the bidding of Megan. So,
I have to kill Carl. I'm so sick of Carl. Carl could go away.
I think, hopefully, maybe they can resurrect Carl with the arc with the guys on the horses.
He's supposed to be younger.
Well, and also with Negan, there's supposed to be an arc there that they might be able to make interesting. But I think Maggie would make the most sense for the story. Not that she's almost dead or has become useless, but it actually would be just almost a little more tragic than Glenn. It would be more tragic for the story if it's Maggie, say, versus Daryl. Daryl is just a fan favorite.
Right.
But what has he got going on in the story?
Well, he's another one I felt like they kind of betrayed who he was this season. And they didn't build his story to do it. Like, when he takes off after... the Saviors, because that guy who stole his bike is out there, and he gets snuck up on from behind. I was like...
That was all such crap.
I mean, that whole storyline was just, yeah, crap. It was horrible. But I'm like, here's like this tracker who for, what are we in, season six? Six seasons has been able to find, you know, the smallest little indication of where somebody has gone. Walks into a clearing where... what, 15 people are surrounding them and doesn't notice? What? I mean, that just, like, completely went against his entire skill set. And I was like, I get, you know, maybe he got emotionally wrought and he couldn't, like, see straight, but that's an awful lot of not seeing to do.
That was the whole buildup of that episode, though, was, you know, the fact that he wasn't seeing straight and that he was just blindly going in, even though Glenn was saying how stupid it was. I mean, they really... they built that whole thing up before he did that stupid move, so I don't think they did. I think they did a good enough job explaining that that was dumb, you know, that he really shouldn't be doing this, and then, of course, he fell right into the trap, just like Glenn said he was going to do.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I think the most of that episode was devoted to that this is a bad idea, and then it turns out it really was a bad idea.
Shot with a bullet. Bad idea with a bullet. Yeah, I didn't feel that way. I didn't have the emotional satisfaction of feeling like they built that enough. And, you know, maybe I need to watch it again to kind of see how it unfolds. But it was too rushed for me, I guess. I don't know. I felt like they had so much that they tried to cram into the last few episodes to get everybody in trouble, to get everybody so that they're on their knees for Negan. I mean, they leave Alexandria in the hands of Gabriel. Well, Rick leaves his infant daughter with, you know, Gabriel. Like, I understand he's, like, training to fight, but I don't know. I just, and they did that whole scene, and I'm like, I don't believe any of this. Like, I don't believe Rick is, like, handing his daughter over to this guy. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I will say, you know, in the defense of all that is the whole, I would have a hard time believing that Rick wouldn't just leave his daughter, but that Rick would, you know, everybody was gone. Like, all the cool people were gone.
Everybody and, who could defend, you know, Alexandria was not there. Everybody.
Right. Yep. And that I don't believe. I think, you know, how many times did Daryl go off on a crazy mission or whatever and they just said, oh, he'll be back. You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, here he's off and everybody's like, oh, this is a terrible idea.
Four main characters have to chase after him.
That's right.
Four.
Well, no, two went after Daryl and the other two went to get Maggie to a hospital. Or the rest of them went.
Well, yeah, no, three.
Not that many people needed to go with Maggie, for sure.
Yeah, three went after Daryl because it was Michonne, Glenn and Sasha.
Right?
Anyway. But yes, but it was all, I mean, all of that was to get them all to Negan at the same time. The whole reason for it. So.
Yeah. You want to talk about the lighter side of, you know, everybody hooking up and getting busy?
There was an awful lot of sex going on in this.
There was an awful lot of getting busy in this half a season. It's like, oh my gosh. It's like, all right, well, we're comfy now. Let's hook up.
We have beds.
That's right.
We actually have beds. So let's put it to use.
Right.
But that's true. I don't know. What did you guys think of Michonne and Rick?
I thought it was fine. Made sense.
Yeah, I could see the connection.
I mean, they're kind of the two, you know, I guess, natural leaders on the male and female spectrum, you know.
Mm-hmm. And they always had a connection. It was Carl and Rick that brought Michonne back after the prison, I guess. She was just going to go off on her own again, kind of in a way that Carol was going to, right, where she just left them behind. And it was finding Carl that brought her kind of back to, you know, an emotional. And then that's when her backstory opened up and they told her backstory about her son and all that. So, yeah, I could see the emotional connection between them.
Yeah.
So can my cat, apparently. She's like, meow. I didn't know she was in here, so. An added bonus.
Cameos. You know, it's the best.
Yes. And she's back, trying to walk across my desk.
Let's see if we have technical difficulty.
Yeah.
Okay. Hello.
Nope, no technical difficulty. I'm still here.
Yeah. There you go. It's my grumpy face cat, because everybody likes a cat on the Hangout, right?
Yes.
Yes.
It's the internet. Everybody loves cats, period.
You're a star.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Okay, so I'm hoping it's Carl. My guess is it's going to be Glenn, because I think they made a big deal about it not following the book, so it would follow the book. So.
Yeah. My bet's on Glenn, just from everything I've seen. although
well,
I really like.
Well, he was supposed to die already anyway, wasn't he?
Yeah, like he dies in the book in that scene. To... So yeah.
That's right.
Well, Carol was supposed to die in the prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So did everybody see
cat or something?
Batman Superman?
No.
No.
No, that's fine. We don't need to talk about it anyway.
I just heard so many bad things.
It's not any good.
I wasn't gonna waste my money. I'll spend $5 to rent it when it comes out, but I wasn't gonna go to the theater and spend, you know, $30 to take my wife and I to go see a movie that wasn't well done.
No. It's not. It's very poorly done.
Well, it's primarily the storytelling, right? Right,
yes.
Rhonda. It's the story that didn't evolve well.
They it was pretty much everything except the actors probably in the art direction. Although there were a couple of scenes in it that really had bad special effects that kind of surprised me. Hmm. The costuming and different things like that was really good. I think the art direction was in general pretty good. But the story and edited that film destroyed it. They may have a really, really good film on the cutting room floor, but someone slaughtered that and put together a Frankenstein of a movie so that, you know, you're in 30 minutes into it and you don't like or care about anybody.
Hmm. That's sad.
Well, from what I heard is that they did a really bad job, you know, where, like, the Avengers succeeded in bringing a bunch of different characters and storylines kind of into one group. They did a really bad job, you know, integrating, you know, Batman, Superman, Lex Luthor, Wonder Woman, and, you know, that just it killed it. A movie that was supposed to be about this birth of a group dynamic, and that's the one thing that they didn't, you know, the most important thing that they didn't actually
they
put
didn't
in.
Do.
Not that I've seen it, so I can't say personally, and I hate people that, you know, hate on movies that haven't seen it, and I'm doing it right now, but
we're not hating on it. You're just saying this is what I've heard, and it was a deterrent because this is all I heard. And if I would have read at least one review that was like, "Hey, this is great, go see it," but everything was like,
And I felt the same way about, you know, the Superman reboot that was the previous movie to this, and, you know, the end of that movie just killed me. I was like, really? Did they need to destroy all of Metropolis? I mean, really? It's like, this is Superman. This is a guy who's saving lives, and he's just going to assume that all these people have evacuated the buildings he's slamming this guy into? Come on! How many people did he kill in those buildings? They don't ever say that, do they?
Nope.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that it's the Superman franchise, I guess, that's been hit so hard with this sort of bad storytelling and bad editing and probably bad production to a degree. And kind of sad. Although, in a lot of ways, you know, if you look at where Superman came from in a historical context, coming out of World War II and the kind of needing that superhuman... We really don't like heroes like that anymore, so I can see where they were trying to, like, make him more complicated, because if you're just always the good guy, there's nowhere to go with a three-story arc. You know, there's no three stories to tell when you're always the good guy. So I can kind of see them trying to muddy him to a degree, but...
were able to accomplish that with Captain America.
Right. Right.
And that's what I thought. Superman is what I thought was going to happen with the Captain America movie. I just thought that, you know, people don't care about a Captain America character, that type of attitude and that time period. There's just not that kind of the same passion and feel, and they pulled that off.
Right. Well, that was well written and probably what better edited.
Yeah.
And you have to be, I know it was interesting. I read an article. I was going to link it to you guys, but I don't know, I have this problem sometimes where I read things and I forget where I read them and I can't find them again. Does anybody else go through that? Like, I had this really interesting article and now I don't remember where I read it. So I was going through that as we're prepping for the show today. And the basic argument of the article was that superhero movies suck because they're always an advertisement for the next movie. Like, they keep getting locked in this cycle of extending it out to either a trilogy or introducing characters that are going to have their own movies or getting, you know, just planning too much in the future. And I was wondering if that might have been part of what happened with Batman versus Superman is they have so much planned out past this that they just had to get this movie out so they could get working on those other things. So I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting concept.
Well, I think, yeah, you know, the Marvel, you know, they had this running list that they wanted to do. I'm losing it at the moment of what they call it. Phase 1, Phase 2, and Phase 3 of how they're going to do it. And I didn't ever feel that, you know, the Marvel movies, you know, the Avengers is a closed movie. You know, they have the people come together. There's an enemy, they defeat the enemy, happy ending-ish. And then, you know, they've kind of done that all the way through. And I think probably Captain America Civil War will probably be, you know, one of the first ones because there's supposed to be a second part of it, you know, Civil War Part 2. So that one will probably end in a bit of a, you know, a down point.
Right.
But I don't mind the introducing the characters. It does make me excited for what's coming up next. And it's almost like a bit of an episodic. And it's not, you know, like somebody got beaten up with a bat named Lucille and we don't know who it is. You know, you kind of know the direction it's going to go, not to bring it back to that sore scab that I just picked off. Sorry. But, you know, I think that's what's great about the Marvel movies is people have kind of, they're in that groove. And DC hasn't figured it out. You know, they just, it was sloppy because they've had so many different little, you know, they had the three Batman, the Dark Knight trilogy that was so good.
Yeah.
Right. The Dark Knight trilogy was so good, and then, you know, that's kind of the last movie they're building off of, I think, right? Is that the last DC one that came out? I think so. And then Superman, and then this one. So, Rhonda, what did you think of Ben Affleck as Batman?
I think he was fine.
Yeah, I heard that people liked him.
I think the cast was perfectly fine. I think they did a good job. I know a lot of people did not like Lex Luthor. I think, forgive me, I don't know the guy's name.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Thank you. I think he was fine. It was a great person to cast for Lex Luthor. I think he was fine. I think that what got messed up is when the story writers and the director decided to make him into the Joker. And Lex Luthor is not a Joker. I don't know why they...
It doesn't even make sense.
No, it doesn't. And that's the way he was. He was just like this maniacal, crazy left field. And Lex Luthor is highly intelligent. He is a megalomaniac, and
he's calculating.
He is very calculating, and he was smart to begin with, but then he just turned into this nut. And I think that's the storytellers. That's the directors. I think the cast was really good. I think they did a great job.
I like the way that Gene Hackman played Lex Luthor in the earlier Superman movies. Mm-hmm. You know, that was... He was a great character for that. And I like Jesse Eisenberg, so I was happy to see that he got the role. But, yeah, if they're trying to turn him into the Jared Leto Joker, then that's completely the wrong fit, you know, for that character. But there is light at the end of the tunnel because Suicide Squad is coming out soon, and that does look pretty good.
Well, the thing that Suicide Squad seems to be doing right is that they're not taking it as seriously as the other DC movies seem to take themselves. Like, there's no humor. They're just all dark, and angst. And that's what people like about Marvel.
Right. But I think the reason they did that was because the Dark Knight series was so good, and that was dark all the way through. But they just, you know, they really pulled that series off. It was brilliant writing, good acting. You know, the story all came together, and that there was not a lot of sunshine and roses in those series of movies. And I think they got like, oh, well, if we have to please our audience, we have to keep that same formula. But they just didn't do it right.
No. No. So, and Suicide Squad...
I was agreeing with you when you were saying
Suicide Squad is also all villains.
Right.
It's an anti-hero movie. So we're not talking about your Superman and your Wonder Woman, the nice, clean, squeaky immortals.
Perfect heroes.
We're talking about the worst of the worst. These are the bad, bad, bad villains that they have coerced and conned into saving, doing their dirty work.
I've always liked the villains in DC anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They're just more interesting.
Well, yeah, that's because, you know, both Superman and Wonder Woman to a degree, although Wonder Woman hasn't gotten a really great treatment, just their origins were so simplified and their abilities were so straightforward that they didn't have the complexity that we want in characters now. I don't know, I've always liked the bad guys. Always been a thing for me when I was, you know, acting when I was younger. I always wanted to play whoever was the bad person because it was just so much more fun. So the characters usually have more depth to them. So
everybody does. The bad guys are much more fun to...
Yeah, and they're usually charismatic, and there's usually some, like, I can't help but like this person thing.
Bigger than life.
Yeah.
So look, there's one character in particular. I went back and got the very first Suicide Squad in digital when they first started putting them together as the Suicide Squad. And it's really funny because they really they are really some awfully clean-cut villains back then. But there's one character that plays the witch. Why can I not remember her name? The Enchantress, yeah. June Moon and the Enchantress. The portrayal of that character looks phenomenal. It just looks... fantastic. In Suicide Squad, she's just like your average blonde woman, and then she's possessed by a witch. And when they're such idiots, every time they go on a campaign, they take her because the witch is so powerful. But when she lets the witch out, the witch is completely controlling. It's an entirely different person. And the witch always does exactly what she wants to do, which is try to kill everybody and escape. And I'm always like, why are you people taking this woman? And there's always a possibility, too, that every time she lets the witch out, that the witch will be able to finally take over and get rid of her forever and stay the witch. But... The couple of shots I've seen of the Enchantress they're good. They're very well. It's beautiful artwork.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, it'll be the heart train came off the track there. I think the big part that, you know, a lot of people will be comparing Jared Leto to, you know, the previous Joker that everybody loves so much, you know, that Heath Ledger played. And you know, but it's kind of different. He's supposed to play more of the comic book, you know, crazy tattooed guy, not the darker one. But it'll be interesting to see how he plays the Joker, because that's been played now by, you know, two other major Hollywood actors, you know, before him.
Yeah, I think he can do it. And if he does, from what I've seen so far, to me, that's part of just brilliant storytelling, because there are so many different ways you can portray the Joker. There's so many different ways that that character can be represented, and the audience still go, yeah, that's the Joker. And I think that's kind of a cool experience, at least for me as an audience member, to say, yeah, he's a Joker, you know.
Well, it speaks of the depth of the character, too, that mm-hmm. it can have that much flexibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can play crazy a lot of different ways.
Yeah, you can. Absolutely.
Crazy clown.
Or a crazy cat who keeps walking all over the... Don't mind her.
There he goes again.
Just wants her 15 minutes.
She really
it's
does.
Not the cat you're looking for.
Yeah,
I did not see a cat.
So
there is no cat.
Switch gears, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm, go for it.
Did anybody get to see the behind-the-scenes documentary that they did for Episode 7 when it came out on Blu-ray?
Mm-mm. Not yet.
No.
Really good.
But I did get to see Star Wars again. I got to finally see it twice. So.
Well, normally, you know, when they do special features on Blu-rays and they do, like, behind-the-scenes thing, it's, you know, anymore, it's like a quick 5-minute thing. Oh, this is how we did everything. But this one was a full-on, you know, hour and 10-minute documentary on, you know, how they came about just building Episode 7 after so long and getting the original characters back and the, you know, pre-production process of going through it.
I had a little bit of a chill with that. That sounds really exciting.
It's really good. I mean, I watched it and then I showed it to my class last week. And, you know, I know if it holds their attention, it's a winner, you know. Because
right.
Sitting that still for any length of time is, you know, a bit of a task. So anyway, it's really good. The other special features are much shorter, but, you know, the fact that they actually put that in there and, you know, kind of the lead up to that was a lot of the reviews I was seeing was that the special edition or the special features were not going to be all that great, and depending on which store you bought it at was how you're going to get, you know, all the stuff you want. But, I don't know, I just bought a copy at Costco and it seemed fine. But, yeah, highly recommend watching it. It's really cool, especially if you liked the movie.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I saw it pop up, I think, in Amazon, and I've just been too busy to sit down and watch anything for that long.
Yeah, I agree.
Good. Awesome.
Well, I think one of the things I love about that is that they did respect the fan base so much with the new movie. It didn't pander, but it, and I've been wanting to try to write a piece about this, about the power of nostalgia, because I saw it opening weekend, so I saw it the first, you know, day within the first 24 hours it came out, and then I saw it, you know, 2 weeks ago in the theater, and talk about a different experience in terms of being in the crowd, because you could feel the excitement the opening weekend, and you just knew the people who were there were such fans, because as soon as the yellow, you know, script comes up on the screen, people are clapping, and they're cheering, mm-hmm. and they're so happy, and then seeing it, you know, in the second run theater for, you know, $4 ticket, where your shoes are sticking to the floor, you know, 6 or 7 other people in the whole theater, two who are an elderly couple who were constantly trying to talk at each other about what was happening in the movie. It was definitely a different experience. I was thinking about that, but I was thinking about the pull nostalgia has toward that, and how that's a really tender place to go, because you wanna acknowledge what existed, but you don't want to get trapped in it. And I thought that they did that really well. And I would be interested to see the making of documentary just to see the kind of attention that they gave that, because they did manage to master that so nicely.
Right. And they gave the, you know, the pre-production before they started filming was a good chunk of the documentary. And then they went into the filming, and then it ends with the, you know, Han Solo demise scene. They kind of talk about that between the two actors and, you know, how important that was and, you know, how they treated it. And, you know, they tried to get as many people out of the set as possible when they were filming it. And,
well, it had a great emotional depth. And seeing it twice and the second time around, I still had that same sort of gut-wrenching feeling about it, even though both times I knew what was coming. I still had that emotional intensity, which really does speak to the power between the two actors and the way it was directed and handled. So
it wasn't the two actors didn't get me. It was the Chewbacca yelling that got me.
Oh yeah.
Every time it's just like, oh man, there goes his best friend, and he's still alive, and he's gonna have to live with this, and so on and so forth. And,
I mean, still Chewie a big hug.
Like, yeah,
they really do. I mean, who doesn't want to give Chewie a big hug regardless? But you know. He's a giant walking carpet.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
did you guys see the trailer for Rogue One yet?
Yes.
Super awesome.
Oh my god, so excited. They look so cool.
It just looks good. I mean, it's going to be a darker... IGN did a really good breakdown of the trailer, and, you know, things that... I love it when they do that, just so you can kind of... They do more research on what the different frames mean that's in the trailer. And, yeah, it looks really cool. And the character that plays Mon Mothma looks,
oh God,
I swear
it's
to God, identical to the same...
I thought she must be her daughter.
I know, it's crazy. She looks just like the lady who played her in episode 4.
She does. Like, I saw like, a side-by-side, and I was just like, how...
It's not the same woman?
No. It's not. It looks the same. I mean, it's the same woman. Apparently, her character shows up in episode 3, which I don't remember that part at all. But, you know, it brings me back to the scene in episode 4 where her character says, you know, Minnie Bothans died trying to get us this information. She gets this really sad look on her face, and then now we get to see the story of why she was so invested in that person, you know, that went to go steal the plans, or the team right. that went to go steal the plans, and it's like, man, that's so cool.
Yeah, I know, I can't wait. It's so exciting.
But it's not the same actress?
No,
it's not the same actress.
So what you're saying is, it's two different people. That's what I'm saying. They look that similar. This is like her younger doppelganger. It's amazing. They did a really good job casting that.
Now, you guys can zoom in on Rhonda's face right now. This is research mode. If you've never seen research mode on somebody, this is research mode. She's like, I'm confirming this. The internet needs to confirm this for me right now.
Don't push your finger through your temple.
Yeah.
I kept seeing side by sides, and I thought what they were saying is, boy, hasn't this actress aged well. But they're two different actresses?
Yes.
Wait, let's say it one more time. Two different actresses.
Two different people.
That's right. One of these things is not like
the other. Fun.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's spooky how close she is to the gal that was in episode 4. I mean, there's no way that the gal in episode 4 would, you know, they could get to look that young, I don't think.
No, I mean, that was...
I mean, because she's got to be... Yeah, she's got to be, you know, pushing 70, you know, at this point. And I mean, if you look at Harrison Ford then and look at Harrison Ford now, they don't look like the same Han Solo. Definitely looks older, you know, which is fine.
But, oh, Ryan, did you read... You probably heard it in the special features. Or was it special features or at a con or something? J.J. Abrams said that Ray's parents have not appeared in the film.
No. I did read it. I read it yesterday, and I was just like, yes!
Just I thought of you. I almost texted it to you.
A rewind to that, the hangout that we did after Star Wars came out, we had this big argument that, you know, everybody thinks that she's Luke's daughter, and I'm just like, no. No. And it's not no because I know for a fact, or there's something that told me in the story. It's just I don't want her to be Luke's daughter. I just don't want the story to be that small. You know, it's a big universe. There used to be thousands upon thousands of Jedis. And now all of a sudden Luke is the only one that – Luke and Leia are the only ones that can make Jedis? Come on. So anyway –
Oh, you should have heard the guys over at Radio Foo Bar when I suggested that she was Obi-Wan's daughter.
Oh, really?
They flipped out. They absolutely they went crazy.
I don't think that's
possible. I still think that's a valid story. That's a valid potential. Although I don't think she's his daughter. I think
it's not valid, but I didn't know it'd drive him that crazy. I mean, I like poking
her.
She's way too young to be Obi-Wan's daughter. Yeah, I mean, how old was he? Yeah, she would have to be the granddaughter. And we don't know that... Well, no, I don't think that's possible because they're not allowed to have marriages. And, you know, he went off to Tatooine at the end of episode 3 to look after Luke. And
yeah,
then supposedly
just... They don't fool around on the side. The crows do it.
Okay. That's a true story, but that would almost be stretching it.
See, this is what happened on Radio Foo Bar.
Is it?
Well, they were valid in their craziness.
See?
I was going to say something else about it, and I couldn't remember what it was. Oh, man, I don't remember what it was. I was going to pivot to a different point, and then
Obi-Wan'd you.
Yeah.
we want to.
This is not the thought you were looking for. Go away.
Not the conspiracy theory you're looking for. Move along.
So do you think Darth Vader's going to show up in Rogue One?
I would think so.
It's possible.
He would be around at that time, yes.
That would be an interesting bridge between Episode 3 and Episode 4. I mean, it would only work if James Earl Jones was going to do the voice, and if for whatever reason he said he wasn't going to do it, somehow I don't think that Darth Vader's going to be in it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Because that voice is as iconic as the costume. So, you know, yeah, I don't think that would work.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun.
I think it would be better if he wasn't in it, honestly.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. Well, because it's kind of... this has happened before. Like the monster you can't see is scarier than the monster you can see. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what they could do to make him seem as, like, big and bad and have him show up when we know his story already.
Well, I think it wouldn't be that he's big and bad. I just think, you know, it would be one of those callbacks to the fan type thing. It's just like, oh, man, this is the same time when Darth Vader was around. Do we get to see him walk around in the full costume again? You know?
Well, yeah, like maybe if we just catch a glimpse of him, maybe.
And that might be what it is. He might just
Yeah, that's probably.
Everyone's like, ooh, see, there he goes. There goes.
That cape around the corner.
Strangle someone in the corner.
I know that's his cape. It'll be like those cartoons. Have you seen that cartoon? I have the book, but I can't remember what it's called, where Darth Vader is actually raising Luke and Leia.
Oh, yeah, that's so cute.
And there's one cartoon, you know, where she's cut little hearts out of his cape.
Oh.
It's so adorable. And they actually did a statue of it where, you know, he's just, like, looking at her, and she's, like, so filled with, like, so proud that she cut all these little hearts in his cape, and he's just like... Adorable. But he could catch a corner of his cape and it could have little hearts in it, and then that would be all.
Oh, you'd lose it. You would just lose it.
Awesome. Well, I think that's what we had on our docket, yeah?
I was just thinking, okay, so we've talked about pop culture. We talked about any lifestyle stuff.
Oh, well, here's a technology one. I could do tech something or other. The, you know, VR headsets that are kind of hitting the market right now, you know, via PlayStation, and I think Xbox is going to have one soon. And what's the big one that... Help me out here, guys. Oculus, thank you. Oculus Rift, you know, finally starting to ship and come out and... Just on a technical aspect of it, I mean, have you guys tried those before, like Google Cardboard or anything like that?
I've tried Google Cardboard, and it... Yeah, I'm one of those people that just gets really motion sick. Oh. I have the same problem with 3D, actually. So it would have to be advanced. It's still not to the point where I'd be that interested in trying it, because I would probably get really sick.
I was watching, not to plug IGN again, but I did see a lot of my gaming tech and news on IGN. You know, they did a thing with VR. I can't remember the name of the game. Paranormal Activity in VR. It's a game kind of like, you know, you're wandering around a house and, you know, things jump out at you, but you can look around and, you know, do all this stuff. And all the noises are coming directly in your ear directionally. And I was just like, wow. I'm almost too chicken to try that. It's like, I don't really get freaked out by scary movies or anything, but, you know, when you're, like, immersed that deeply into it, you know, in your ears and your eyes.
Yeah, I just listened to 7 Days to Die on Chris's computer when he was playing it, and I was like, nope. Nope. Sorry.
Yeah, that game's freaky.
Yeah, I know. I know.
It's because you start out naked with your underwear, and it's like, okay, make a bow quickly before the zombie comes and eats you, which is great. I mean, that's some of the redeeming values of the game, is that it is so, you know, realistic. But, I mean, come on. Who's going to drop into the world in their underwear? When the zombie apocalypse started, what did you just like? I'm going to take off my jeans and my t-shirt. I'm going to go hang out in this field.
Barefoot.
Let's look at the reality of that situation. Come on, give us pants and a shirt that say, you know, whatever. The fact that you show up in your boxers.
We talked about games, and we got tech. Yeah. And technically, we talked about a con, so that's lifestyle.
Yeah.
The cons
of the lifestyle. What games did we talk
about? Oh, we were just talking about 7 days to die.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, and
yeah, we've been playing the Division. VR.
Of the Division, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm curious about that because it, you know, came out with mixed reviews, and I didn't buy it because it came out with mixed reviews. What's your take?
A couple of things. We actually did a demo of it last year at North Carolina, Raleigh Comic Con, and then we joined the beta, and we played the beta a few times, and I actually was extremely impressed with the environments and the physics engine, because the graphics are so intense, they're so realistic that you really got to have them. You really need the physics to match that, and I thought they did. I actually was on fire with the game for like 4 weeks, and then I started getting bored. I thought they did two smart things. The Division is a situation where a disease has broken out and a huge percentage of the population has died. And they're still trying to find a cure. And Manhattan Island has been isolated off. And there are three factions of people who are wreaking havoc on the island. And the island is out of control. And so you go in as an agent to take down some of these bad guys so we can get control of the island again, find a cure, and get through this mess. The cool thing that they did is there's a section of downtown that they call the Dark Zone. And so what they've done is they've created two games in one, it seems to me. They've got a sort of an RPG first-person shooter game where you go in, you can play with other players, and you go on missions. So you're fighting NPCs. But in the Dark Zone, it's rogue. It's PvP. It's right. Just like you go into the world, and everybody that's in there, you're trying to get loot, and you have to have an extraction point, so it's the whole capture the flag kind of thing, where you try to get to the extraction point and make it without getting killed. And all the other players, massive online role players, the other players in the game are trying to kill you. And I was like, well, that's cool, because if somebody wants to play the PvP part of it, they can play that. But then if they've got a friend who doesn't like the PvP, they can go on missions. And I was like, this is brilliant. I really like this because, you know, John's got a buddy that he likes to go into the Dark Zone. And they just go in and they get killed all the time. And then when John and I play, we just run all these missions. And you can run the missions individually on different difficulty levels. So you don't have to set the game at the beginning that, you know, okay, I want hard. When you go into a mission, you can say, okay, how do you want to run the mission? Hard, difficult, crazy, whatever. Hmm. But after a while, I just felt like that the mission section was getting repetitive. And I was like, there's nothing drawing me back into the game. But I think part of that is that I wasn't running enough missions. I was running, there's all kinds of little side missions and encounters, and you collect things. There's crafting and all kinds of different awards and achievements to get. And I think what I got in the mode of doing is constantly just doing these little side missions, and that was beginning to feel boring. And what I need to do is get in there with the other people I play with and just go run the big missions to get some diversity in the story. So that's
well, that's what I had heard, that the end game was just the replayability, if you weren't doing PvP, was not the best.
Yeah, we'll see, because I'm only, I'm not sure how many levels they've got right now. I'm 18, and I know they have at least 30 levels. So, and I've only run, I think I've run only 3 missions. So I hope that to hook up with these guys maybe today or this week and play another mission. Because that's to me the funnest part is when I play with a couple of people that are my friends and we go in and try to get organized and not die.
Is that what you're supposed
to do? Sounds familiar. I think I've been there before. Well, it's funny, Ronick. Your description of your journey through an MMO is pretty much what's happened to me in every MMO I've ever played, where you're on that like main track, and then all of a sudden you start deviating on these little side quests, and then you get lost on the side quests, and you know, then you forget where the main quest was and the main storyline. So I've had that happen. You get too caught up in crafting and overwhelming.
Yeah, but I've got some.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I think it would be important to note that Amy did post something in the questions because we had mentioned the questions.
Oh, I've been looking, but I didn't know how to get a.
Where is it?
So thank you, Amy, for putting up Vader and Son. Q&A. It's a little tab. Q&A.
It does. It has its own thing.
It does.
Oh, Vader and Son, I think.
Vader and Son?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Name of the cartoon.
Yay, somebody was watching. And I got the technology to work.
So we just need to say Amy's name frequently through the rest of the show.
Yes, thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
See, she's going for everybody.
I had a Killjoy,
especially. Oh, go ahead, Rhonda, finish her.
Killjoy for what?
I kind of have to go.
She
doesn't want to hang out with us anymore. Maybe Amy will hang out with us.
I guess she would.
I have no doubt that Amy would hang out with us. She just said, not a good question, but at least you get to see how Q&A works.
It wasn't a good question. I think it was a good answer.
It was a good answer. It definitely keeps it. Oh, look, there's a little star on it. Wonder what happens when I do that.
Amy, next time, invite a friend.
That's right. Oh, that's funny. I can put a little star on them.
That's distracting. Okay.
Ron is like, people are talking to us in real time. I don't know how to handle this. And she said, no need to embarrass me since I just got here. And yes, she can now hang out.
Well, it's been fun, guys.
It's been really fun.
Yes, we overcame the technical difficulties.
Yes, we did. We did.
We always do.
I finally got my background to actually come up the right direction.
I know. If you haven't noticed, please,
it's please awesome.
Admire. Speak again, Ryan, so it comes on again.
Oh, hi. Welcome to my background. There it is. It's right here. That'll be the freeze frame again for the episode, just like it was when I pointed at my my theater popcorn guys.
Right,
up at the
that's like, right.
The thumbnail for that one was me going, awesome.
I'm kind of hoping I can get a freeze frame of Rhonda, Rhonda's reaction to The Walking Dead. Yes, that one.
Should I be still?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know if YouTube would like that so much.
There goes the possibility of any young people or parents of any young people watch the show.
Yeah, exactly. We should be safe for work, so.
Well, do that fuzzy thing over
right,
my
can
hands.
Fuzzy over, and do the little like fuzzy over the hands thing. Yeah.
Right.
Just digitize me out. I forgot we're family friendly.
Yes, we are family friendly for the most part.
We were family friendly. You guys are mistaken.
Yeah. We might have crossed the line.
Way to go, Rhonda.
Hey, I just got back from Florida celebrating, so.
What were you celebrating in Florida?
My sister's birthday.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, we had a whole girls' day yesterday, and so I'll just say it started off with coconut vodka and watermelon juice.
Hmm.
Wow. That sounds like a recipe for, are you hungover?
Surprisingly not, and I think I figured it out. Just keep drinking.
But you said you were sober at the start of the episode.
Well, all day. You got to start.
Oh, I see.
So we had the the cucumber vodka at lunch, and then we went to the movies, and we had the Millionaire Mojito. Ooh. And then we ended the day with a few sea breezes. Coconut rum.
Yeah.
It was a girls' weekend. It was awesome.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad you got to spend some time with your sister.
Yeah, there's some lifestyle stuff for you.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking that.
Coconut rum and cucumber rum.
You might need to put a recipe for one of those drinks up on the site for us.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, the alcoholism of Rhonda section.
The adult section.
That's right. Yes. It'll be a big picture of her flipping off the camera.
The digitized hand.
That's right.
This is the Rhonda Embassy.
The Rhonda Embassy is blurry. That may or may
That's
not
where we talk about around. South Park and
screw you guys. I'm going home. I do what I want. I do what I want.
All right, well, thank you for those of you who turned in and watched our show live. We will have this episode, podcast episode this week. And please make sure to check out our new website, thegeekembassy.com. We're also at The Geek Embassy for Twitter, and we have The Geek Embassy on Facebook as well. So thanks. Thanks,
yes.
Everybody, for hanging out today. And until next time, get your geek on.
Geeky.
Geeky.